Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, we'll be continuing to look at many different health issues, issues that impact upon virtually every person in this audience. I like to do shows that give people hope. In fact, one of the hallmarks of this program over the years is that no matter what your background or politics, education or economic or social standing or gender or age, there's always something that we can do in a constructive way to look for solutions to every problem we have. And if nothing else, this is a program dedicated to resolving solutions, getting to the grid of things and going from there. Whether you have arthritis or depression, whether you're overweight or there's an ecological disaster that you're a part of, we're going to look to see what we can do to help. Part of that is to understand how problems evolve. If we understand that something's not good for us, or is at least suspect in causing illness, by getting a heads up, then we don't become victims of it. So it's not just the remedial action, it's also the preventative action. Just think, if people hadn't started smoking, how much better health we would have, how many people would still be alive. So I'm going to focus upon what is wrong that we can correct, and once we do have a problem, how to go forward from there. Now, for all of the people in this audience who are healthy, who have really been conscious in the choices they've made, there's always another level to achieve. Good news on one front, due to the series we've been doing on focusing on the problems and solutions of the conflict at BAI and Pacifica, we have our first major meeting with many different participants from different sides coming up in the next couple days, and which I'll be moderating and hopefully allowing a forum where people can share their input in a way of not looking at trying to besmirch or slander or offend the other people, rather just coming forward to say what is necessary to heal. And so we're going forward, and I'm very pleased about that. Good news for all of you vegetarians. This comes from a new study, and one that is added to the hundreds of other studies, and it shows that vegetarian Buddhist monks had given scientists, according to the Postwire Services, an insight into how fruits and vegetables promote health. Vegetarians have a lower risk of heart disease and bowel cancer than other individuals who do not have a vegetarian diet, and that's because of an acid found in fruits and vegetables, the researchers theorized. And they believe that this particular acid that is found has anti-inflammatory composition similar to that of aspirin. Quote, studies have shown that fruits and vegetables lower in risk of heart disease, stroke, and cancer, unquote, from Dr. John Patterson of the Galloway Royal Infirmary, said that meat eaters have 12 times higher problems than do vegetarians in this respect. I would suggest that's a limited view. I certainly appreciate the interest they're showing, and it certainly helps people who want to switch to a vegetarian diet. That's all good news. But I believe that they have once again overly simplified it. They're looking for the single magic bullet, something that they can then market, patent, and say, ah, you no longer have to eat your fruits and vegetables because we have the drug that will help prevent your rectal cancer and your stroke. It was in fruits and vegetables, and we've isolated it. In any given fruit or vegetable, there are between 150 and 250 different phyto, meaning plant-based chemicals. I isolated over 27 anti-cancer phytochemicals alone from just strawberries. One of the most healing of all foods, one that has at the top of the list, in fact, you can't get better, is watermelon. Watermelon is your single best detoxification food. more than aloe vera, more than garlic. Watermelon does so many different things to so many different systems, and it's all in its phytochemicals. Now, there's phytochemicals in watermelon, for example, that will repair damage to DNA. So if you've been smoking, drinking, having coffee around environmental toxins, and you've damaged your DNA, the good news is that the phytochemicals in adequate quantities will help repair that. Now, there's two ways of doing it, three ways. Eating watermelon, that's good, but generally it's seasonal. Drinking watermelon juice, that's a little better because watermelon is predominantly water, but there's a lot of sugar, and so people who have any form of dysinsulinism, either hypoglycemia or diabetes, that is problematic. Third is to take any of the available concentrates that have removed the sugar but give you the phytochemicals, and that is also beneficial. Whatever way you choose to get your watermelon, watermelon is important. Even to do a one-week watermelon and protein cleanse, meaning have yourself some form of a protein that is pre-digested, a rice protein, a mung bean protein, any of the, there must be 50 or 100 different protein supplements, fine. Take your protein supplement twice a day so you don't lose lean muscle tissue or enzymes or antibodies, all of which are made from protein. But then the rest of the time, just keep juicing. Now, if you do this under proper supervision, this kind of juice is entirely revitalizing. Recently, a individual came up to me after a lecture. I was lecturing in Atlanta, and the person was a professor at the university in Georgia, in Atlanta. And he was talking about incredible mood swings. And one moment he would be depressed, and the next moment he'd be melancholy, and then be extreme or hyper. And he went to the psychologist, who was a friend of his in another department, and diagnosed a manic depression. And then he went to a psychiatrist friend of his, who said that it was bipolar depression, and both recommended various drugs. And he started taking medications. He was up to four different medications. And he was miserable. He had gained a lot of weight. He was fatigued. And it had affected his capacity to teach. He could no longer write. He was incapable of doing proper research. And he saw that I was going to be doing a lecture, so he dropped by. And after the lecture came over and we were talking, and I asked him about his diet and all the things that he had been consuming. And he found it just amazing that there would be any relationship to anything he'd ever eaten and his behavior. And I said, why? Why would you assume that you wouldn't be affected by your behavior, or your behavior wouldn't be affected by what you eat, if everything that you eat becomes who you are? The whole reason for eating and drinking and breathing is that these are the substances of life. Take away any one of those three and you die. Alter the quality of any of those three and you suffer. The more those are altered from their natural and pure state, the more types of illnesses you're going to process. Intellectually, he could understand what I was saying. After all, he's a PhD, professor, published author. He could accept it intellectually, but because he had never believed this, because the dogma is that it doesn't matter what you eat, moderation in all things, he just couldn't make the connection. So his argument, well, everybody has coffee when they get up in the morning, Gary. Everybody. I mean, kids have coffee. You know, he fed his dog coffee. So when he got up in the morning, his dog got up and he would feed the dog bacon and eggs off the table, toast off the table. And I said, how old's your dog? He said, 9. I said, let me guess. Dog's overweight, has dysplasia, arthritis, has allergies, dry skin. He said, yeah. So I said, well, it's not supposed to happen. Your dog's going to be dead within the next 2 to 4 years in all probability. And again, he just couldn't see the connection because he had never had a healthy dog. I said, well, how can you have a healthy dog if you keep feeding what you feed it and you're not healthy? You're 80 pounds overweight. you're only 45 years old. Look at your health. But again, he kept comparing himself. Well, look at other people. And I said, you can't do that because you don't know what's going on in another person's biochemistry. You could have 80% of your arteries occluded and not know it. The first symptom you have that you have a problem is a heart attack or a stroke. So we had a long talk. I didn't have anything else that night I had to do, and I'd already done a PBS special and done my lecture. So I had about 4 hours before the airport. And so we talked for almost that entire time. And I asked him, I said, just try this. If you don't believe in any of this stuff, then why are you here? Why'd you come speak to me? He said, well, it's because my roommate insists upon it. And I figure I don't have anything else to lose, so I'm here. I said, well, would you try one thing, just one thing only? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. He's all right. I said, I'd like for you to try juicing for 1 week, 8 times a day. And I said, what's your favorite vegetable or fruit? He mentioned what his favorite vegetable was. He liked apples. I said, I only want you to have organically grown apples, but I want you to have one apple in a juice, but the rest of the juice is watermelon. Just the red flesh, not the white inner pulp and not the skin. And I want you to have that every day, fresh. And then you can have some protein drinks throughout the day. And I said, you can go to a local health food store and get yourself a protein shake. And you can have 2, even 3 protein shakes, but no other food, none. And see what happens. And I gave him a little idea what to expect. When you withdraw from anything, no matter how bad it is, you're going to go through a reaction. And I said, this is part of what is known as a healing crisis. Your skin can break out, mucus can form at tremendous amounts in your nose, and your nose starts to run, and you'll cough up stuff you didn't even know was in your lungs. And I gave him a story about how when I was in Germany at a particular healing spa in Baden-Baden, they had what was called an inhalation therapy room, and I'd never seen one before. And it was a little container that you go in and sit in, and wonderful aromas would come through, like wintergreen and eucalyptus. And for a half hour, you would breathe this. And I noticed when you went in the room, there were box upon box upon boxes of Kleenex. And they would have people who would go into a room. And I watched this. They'd be sitting there. The aromatherapy come in because you could smell it all over the place. And from little inhalation dishes. And then they would start to cough. And they would cough and cough and cough. And you'd start to see that they were coughing up black. I mean, it looked like soot. And what was remarkable, some of these people had stopped smoking 10 years ago. I saw with every single person over an entire afternoon, without exception, every single one. And so I decided a little test. I'd taken a buddy of mine who considered himself healthy, but he had at one time smoked, but he hadn't smoked in at least 15 years. He went in there, stuff came up out of his system. And the question is, where did it come from? Why didn't I know it before? Well, when your skin starts erupting and you start getting strange things come out of your skin, where do you think it comes from? It doesn't come from outside, it comes from inside. The body had adapted to it. So knowing that the body can purge what it no longer is holding on to, took someone who was suffering from severe arthritis, really crippling arthritis, and had been on medications for 22 years, managed to function, but with great pain, and on a cleansing program, a really good detox program, the 5th day into the program, this woman freaked. Freaked because it was her skin was changing color. So I took a look at it and I said, take a tissue and wipe your skin. And it, this kind of yellow material wiped off her skin. And she wanted to go to the hospital. And I said, did you ever get gold injections? She thought, she said, yeah, a long time ago before my methotrexate. I said, well, test this. This is gold coming out of your system. Sure enough, when tested, it was gold coming out of her system from the gold injection she had received for almost 10 years. Where had that been? Well, how about blocking enzymes, interfering in hormonal processes, interfere in the immune system? And it took 4 days before all that was out of her system. And her skin looked terrible. There was little boils and pimples and really angry-looking red splotches all over her back. This is, I guess, about a 60-year-old woman. And then it all cleared up. What was interesting, when it cleared up, her mucus cleared up. Her puffiness under the eyes cleared up. Her sour breath cleared up. Her bloated stomach cleared up. The arthritis pain in her joints cleared up. Her foggy thinking cleared up. Her fatigue cleared up. All that because the body had purged what had been interfering in its processes. So we have to understand that all cleansing will cause a body to shift in how it deals with what it's adapted to. Now, here's what it means. Let's say that you've been eating hamburgers, hot dogs, milkshakes, french fries, lots of white bread and margarine and milk, the average American diet. And then you go on to healthy food for whatever reason. There's a high probability that for at least anywhere from 2 weeks to 3 months, you're going to feel worse. And you're going to feel worse because the body has actually adapted down to all the negative things you've been doing. And that's because of something called the life force. Call it chi. But it's the essential energy must be maintained. The first rule of life is maintain the energy. So it will adapt all of its systems to maintaining the energy. And visualize a house that has 100 rooms and it's the middle of winter and you've only got so much heat. Do you try to give a little bit of heat into all the rooms, or do you close down 90% of the rooms and only heat a few to conserve the energy? That's what the body does. That's why the number one complaint in America is fatigue. There's fatigue because we've adapted down because our bodies are so toxic. We have depressed our adrenaline function from the adrenal glands. So in order not to keep us sick, the body tries to conserve our energy because we are so toxic, and it shuts down our energy system. So we simply don't have the vitality to do the things that we would otherwise. But in the process of adapting, the adaptation is never to our benefit in the long term. It's a slow death cycle. Now, go back to this. And by the way, you can break that cycle. You can reverse it into a life cycle. But it takes a real commitment. And you have to be patient. And no two people does this turnaround come in the same time. I've seen it come as short as a month. I've seen other people take 2 to 3 years. There's no set timetable. Depends upon how much your body's trying to rid itself of. Because aside from the debris, the toxins, the environmental pollutants, all of this has allowed the viruses and bacteria in your body to manifest. And then we end up looking at the end stage of a viral manifestation, encephalitis, and bacterial infections. And then we say, well, they died of a bacterial infection or a viral infection. No, they died of autotoxemia, from a depressed immune system, from a body that was so loaded with pollutants that it allowed the opportunistic infective molecule to manifest. That's like saying the person died from a bullet. Well, bullets don't kill people. Bullets that are shot from guns can. So you're going to blame the bullet, the virus or bacteria, or the tumor, or are you going to blame the gun and the willingness to shoot yourself or be shot? And that's what we haven't paid attention to. We've just never in our society looked at the real cause, because there's too much politics, too much economic elements. from the mercury in our teeth, the causative factor, the fluoride in our water, causative factor, to the meat we eat, a causative factor, the hormones placed in our animal foods, a factor, pesticides on our crops, a factor, the processing of the vital life force nutrients out of the food before we eat it, a factor, the cooking, overcooking, deep frying of already overprocessed denatured foods, a factor. So those all have to be taken into consideration, but to take them into consideration means that you're going to have to challenge $100 billion a year industries. They're not going to allow it. They have power. And one of the very first things you'll see in individuals or corporations, governmental agencies, is to maintain the power, you have to maintain confidence. To maintain confidence, you have to maintain the assurance in people that what you're offering is right for them and not harmful, and that anyone who challenges is a quack or charlatan. Hence, they set up whole committees, very well financed, of doctors and scientists who've allowed themselves to be hired so they can go out and attack anyone who brings truth. So now you have a professor from a Atlanta college who is a man who has an intellect, but I had to ask him, in what context to use this intellect? Because when it comes to your health, you have refused to take responsibility, and things you've done have been contributing to your ill health. Because his friends all said, well, it's nothing specific, it's just genetic. Take these drugs. But the drugs weren't to cure him. The drugs were simply to limit the symptoms. So he decides that he will try reluctantly, cynically, begrudgingly, he will try this for 1 week. Then I explain, remember, I use this example. Have you ever seen anyone on the street eating out of a garbage basket? Yes. Have you ever seen him take a sandwich that someone else has eaten who may have had hepatitis, who may have had AIDS, who may have had, meningitis, and they're eating from that sandwich, and yet they don't die? Yeah. Well, why don't you try that and see how many hours it takes? Take a stopwatch. Go drink something out of a can from a garbage basket on the street. Eat something out of a, garbage can on the street. And then start a stopwatch and see if it's between 2 to 6 hours before you're in the emergency room with maybe dysentery and severe poisoning. Then he said, well, how do they get away with it? I said, if I were to go and give that person eating on the street a healthy diet, they would get sick. If I gave them a glass of juice and they'd only been drinking coffee and sodas, they would get sick. You have to understand that the mechanism of life allows us to adapt to the circumstances we're in. Once you understand that one of the very first rules of life is adaptation for survival, then we will adapt to any environment. I give him an example. I would have to take that person slowly off their bad food in order to introduce good healthy food and nutrients without them being really taking a turn for the worse. They're not healthy because they're eating out of a garbage. They're dying, and they will not live a long life. But they have adapted to that. And I said, similarly, if you went to Mexico, the first time you drank water out of a spigot, you're going to get diarrhea. Not because it's not healthy water. It's because the bacteria in the water, your system is not adapted to. But a Mexican coming to the United States can get diarrhea also from our water, because they have not adapted to the chemicals or bacteria in our water. Every time you drink the water, you're going to end up with some diarrhea, but it'll be less so because over time the body will adapt. And sooner or later, probably within a year, year and a half, you'll be able to drink any of the water in Mexico without getting sick. But it means your body has taken a big turn down because of that. Same with parasites. Your body will adapt to the parasite by reducing the energy that you have for all other activities. I gave him an example. There was a fella who had worked with me for about 3 months on a project, and he was very conscientious. And what I noticed about the guy is each day he came to work, he had a very, very positive attitude, and he was very complimentary to people. And I always made it a habit of, wherever possible, that anyone who works with me, I make a big juice, and I make it like a gallon of juice in the morning for myself, but I also make a lot of juice for other people, and I take it and I share it with colleagues, just like a little gift, just appreciation gift. And he was always very happy. Look forward to his juice in the morning. And then when he completed his work, and which was extremely well done, and I thanked him for it, paid him for it, and he said he was going to, you know, take a trip back to his hometown, then he was going to go on to another project. I guess it was about a month, month and a half, I hadn't seen him, then I ran into him. And he told me, you know, he was very happy because he was going to get married. I said, great. And I didn't see him again for another month. Then I ran into him, but one of his buddies I'd known, and I said, where's your buddy? Oh, you know, he's this, 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 and this. And I thought, okay. Then it turns out, because I was working with someone who was also working with this other fella, that they were having problems with him. And then I started to get calls virtually every day of the week for about 3 weeks. I got calls, and every call from this fella, this happy, really focused guy, were complaints about people, whining, blaming, moaning, groaning. This isn't right, and that person does this, and this person is, and this. And so finally I said, hold on a second. Called me at like 1:30 in the morning, knowing I'd be awake and working, and I said, what's this call about? He said, well, I just want to tell you about, you know, such and such. And I said, have you heard yourself? Virtually everything out of your mouth is negative. You never look now at the positive of anything. You look for the worst in people or something you can blame on them. I said, something's happened. Something has changed in your life. Have you asked yourself what's different? It was nothing different in my life. I said, I'd like for you to do something. Try this. For one day, just one day out of your life, the person you're going to marry, see whether or not when she communicates with you, is it positive or negative? Is it judgmental and critical, sarcastic and bitter? Is it whining and complaining or entitlement mindset? I'm entitled. Or is it positive and happy? What is it? I don't know. You're the only one who can answer this question, but something's changed in you. And something radical has shifted in your perception of how to deal with issues and people. And since I don't know anything else, I'm just going to suggest you take a look at this. And if I'm wrong and this person is not influencing you in any way, good for you. But if this person is sharing energy and you have adapted to it, then just think of the consequences later in life. To yourself and all the things you do. It's all right. I get a call back 4 days later. This is how he talks. He goes, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh, Gary. Whoa. How do I get out of this mess? That's what mess? He said, well, I've got off the phone with you and I couldn't sleep. I just kept thinking, you know, what's this about? What's this about? But I respect you, and so I decided the next day I just do it. From morning to night, I got a little pen, a little pad I normally keep my day notes on, and I just decided every time I hear something good, I'm going to mark a check mark, and anything negative or bitter or cynical or any of that stuff, I'd make an X. And just to see whether or not you were right, because I hadn't thought about it. Well, at the end of the first day, Gary, there was no checks and there was 163 marks, X's. And it got worse the next day. There was over 200 marks. And then I started to realize, my God, I had alienated all my friends and the people who cared about me. And I was looking to blame them for everything because my fiance didn't like them and all the things that they were saying that I wouldn't see and wouldn't hear about it. I just realized I'd made one big mistake. I had become an extension of her anger at the world. And all we do now is just argue about everything. Nothing's ever right about anything. There's always something wrong with everything or everyone. And there's not a good word said about anyone ever about anything. And I thought, oh my God, what'd I get myself into? I said, well, you can't change a problem till you realize how much you participated in it. And how many times in our society have we done something without thinking? We just react. And we become what we eat, what we breathe, what we drink, and what we think. Because what we think then determines what we believe. It forms our perceptions. And unless you're able to stop your thought process and examine it, you could be going out every day and going through the motions of living a life where all you're really doing is reacting. And that's living a life out of the context and connectedness of the things that allow us a broader perspective. So don't look at this as a negative. Look at this as a positive. The positive being that you have discovered something about the power of a person to influence another human being. Now, if a person can influence you, what could a television show, or a movie, or a novel, or a symphony, or a poem do to influence you? Everything has the power to impact us. What we have to do is stay conscious of whether or not the impact is constructive or destructive. It'll be one or the other. And I said, so where before you had been around positive people and you had been happy and looked for the best in all things, now, for the first time, you were fired from a job from this other guy where when I saw you doing work, when you worked for me, it was great work, but you were conscious of it. Then you got into this whole blame thing, and then that starts a whole spiral. So he said, what should I do? I said, well, how about going around to the people and apologize and for having made judgments or criticism that wasn't justified, and then just go on with your life. Close this chapter if you choose to, and realize it's much better around be around people who are constructive and positive, who have something joyful to share instead of something bitter and angry. Because what comes from bitterness, anger, condemning, vilification, what comes from that? Because if you attach to it, you're going to become a part of it. Like it or not, you're going to be a part of it. And he got that message. What he's done, I have no idea. That's not my business. That was the last time I had a phone conversation with him. And I hope that he makes choices to have someone in his life who really shares a more positive and optimistic view of life and people, is more trusting and more open. But think about all the people we surround ourselves with. And think of then what that does to affect our behavior and our attitudes. Now we come back to this man, this professor. So I asked him, I said, have you ever been around people who are negative and you start to think negative thoughts? People are cynical and you become cynical? He said, yes. And I said, so you could see the impact of a thought on your behavior. Why would what you breathe or drink or eat be any different? Then he made the connection. And so, with a man with a PhD, a full professorship, an author published in peer-reviewed literature in the behavioral sciences, it still took 4 hours to make something that was clear to most people, clear to this person. So we cannot always assume that people who are in positions of authority or influence over others would have an awareness of how life works or should. And that's one of the dangers in a society that automatically defers to authority or power people for our direction. And instead of reserving the right to make our judgments for ourselves based upon our own research and experience with life. And what happens if you change from an adaptive position to a transformational position? 3 weeks ago, I was in Los Angeles lecturing. And at that lecture, there were a group of celebrities, some very famous people. Now, these are not the celebrities I normally lecture, speak with, and counsel, because this was not done in confidence. The whole idea they were there was to be a part of a health support group on longevity and anti-aging, where if they benefited from it, they would take that message of what it did to them to a larger community. So if they gave up milk and dairy and sugar and caffeine and meat and began to meditate and pray and journal write and deal with stress and think before they reacted and all the other things as a part of it, it's a lot more than just taking supplements. I promise you, the supplements may be 1% of this. A lot of it's behavior challenging. Then they had a responsibility to share it with other people. I said, it's not about promoting me or this concept. It's about showing other people who would be influenced by you that they have choices in life that are healthier to make. And so they were there for that reason. And there were a bunch of them. And by the way, it's growing by leaps and bounds because the changes in this short period of time, three weeks, and I counsel these people almost daily, is so substantial that other people within that Hollywood community are getting on board, and I get calls daily from other people who want to join in. And some I didn't even know were alive. Some of these people I thought had died years ago, because I remember seeing old pictures of them. I've always had a love of film history, and I've seen a lot of movies. It's one of the things I do late at night. I go out and catch a late movie just to relax, and which is kind of funny because I frequently see other people who are self-motivated, who are there. And it's hilarious because sometimes we'll come out of a movie, start talking and walking up town together. And none of our friends go to movies late. And here we go to a 1 o'clock in the morning show. You don't get out till 3. And there's maybe 5 or 10 people and you keep seeing the same faces. It's a hoot. I had to do a show on just all these people. They're all well-known people too. In any case, the idea is that we forget about people when they're no longer doing films and all. We think they've died. No, a lot of these people are alive and went on to do other things. And now they're in their 70s, 80s, 90s. And want to live longer. Don't want their pain and illness. And one of the people who helped organize it, a good friend of mine out there, a wonderful human being, but he is glued to the telephone. I think when he was born, it was surgically implanted, genetic. He came out with one of those special genes. You get a little cell phone in your ear. I never see him not talking, forever talking. So we get into the car, and he's going to drive me over to the lecture. And first thing he does, I said, no. If I'm in the car, don't use a cell phone. Oh, I've never had a wreck. And I said, I'm happy you've never had a wreck. And no one's ever died till they die. So the fact you've never had a wreck, that gives me no confidence that you won't have one. And I said, so just, I realize it's just like going off cocaine or heroin for you. But for the next, 20 minutes, go through delirium tremens and shaking and frothing in the mouth so you're not on your cell phone, but don't go on the phone. Okay. Well, he gets there and he's talking nonstop. And I get out. I do the lecture. Everything's fine. Talk with people until it's time for me to get to the airport. It's fine. So I get a call yesterday. Now, mind you, it's only 3 weeks later. Gary, what? I need some help. Why do you need help? Well, I was in an accident. In your car? No. On my bike. On your bike? I went out to the post office and my cell phone rang and I went to answer my cell phone and a car kind of came up beside me and I went to put on the brakes, and I didn't have my hand on the brakes, and I flipped over the thing and broke my elbow and shattered it in 4 places, and I got pins and 7-hour, and then I didn't have the insurance, and then it was $8,000, and blah, 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 blah. I said, good. He said, good? I said, good. Glad it happened. Glad it happened? I'm in pain. I know. That's good. He said, what's good about this? I said, better you be in pain with a broken elbow than someone else be dead because you were on a phone and weren't paying attention. You see, so it's a gift. It's a gift that your injury will make you aware that if you're riding a bike, ride it. If you're driving a car, drive it. But you shouldn't be on a car, in a car, or on a bike with a cell phone. Because what if that were a person, a little kid walks out in front of you and bam, you hit the kid with your bike or a car and you hurt or kill the kid. That's a lesson that someone else would have had to have paid for. This is a lesson, fortunately, you alone paid for. You weren't willing to listen to anyone else's advice. Now you see the consequence. So look at our tragedies, our crisis, and our losses, an opportunity to learn and grow. Instead of condemning the guy that pulled up beside you and blaming him, if both your hands were on the bar, you said you could have stopped and you'd been all right. So there are times in life when we have to ask ourselves, has the crisis that occurred to us given us a lesson of opportunity to learn? And sometimes the best thing that can happen to a person is for them to have a crisis where they're affected but not dead, so they have a chance to start over and really pay attention in the future. Now we go back to this professor. I said, to get to where you are today, how many lessons didn't you pay attention to? How many different times did you do things in spite of good sense and reasoning suggest that it was not the appropriate choice, and that you did them anyhow, almost with a careless regard for the consequence? And he was thinking, he said, well, it's probably a lot of those things I did. And then he started to unfold the circumstances that led up to where he is currently at. And anyone could have seen step by step that every one of these steps was leading him into a disease process to where there would be a payoff. The payoff finally was being able not to have the emotional wherewithal to control his life on a day-to-day basis. Being overweight, actually obese, suffering. He had, aside from his depression, he also had heart disease, elevated cholesterol, elevated blood sugar. He had very swollen ankles, very swollen legs. His calves were just one big veiny calf. He showed me his calf on his right leg. It's just filled with veins and protrusions, all from poor circulation. I said, now, you didn't wake up one day and it was suddenly all there. That took time to do. So as much time as it took to create it, it's going to take time to reverse it. But in reversing a condition, you have to use different tools than the condition was created with. As I've said many times, the mind that creates a problem can never be the mind that solves it. And we have to use a different mindset. We have to change our perspective. And so that's how I left it. Now, I get a call. And I get a call yesterday. And in the call, this is this guy. I'd give him my number through my office. And he said, son of a gun. That's how he opened it. He said, Gary, son of a gun. I said, what? He said, well, he said, I'm still not sure about a lot of stuff, but I'll give you this. I went on all those juices and started reading some of your book. I had a copy of my new book, The Baby Boomer's Guide to Getting It Right Second Time Around. And I gave him a copy. It was my only copy. I said, here, I know what's in it. I wrote it, so I gave it to him as a gift. He'd read it. He'd read about half of it, he said. He said, I'll tell you. He said, I felt terrible the first day. I felt nauseous and fatigued. I threw up a couple times, and I slept for like 14 hours. And then the next day, I felt a little better, and then a little better. And I noticed something really different. At the end of 1 week, my tongue was no longer coated, and it no longer had that strange taste in the morning. And he said, and then 3 nights ago, I go to bed and I'm not sleepy. And so he gets back up and he reads and he does some writing. And 2.5 hours later, he goes to bed and he gets up an hour earlier than normal and he's just full with energy, just filled. He said, I just bounce out of bed. He said, I never bounce out of bed. I hate getting out of bed. I'm fatigued. I'm tired. I have to have 2.5 cups of coffee. I have about 6 tablespoons of sugar. He said, it's hard for me to get my motor moving. And he said, instead I went in and I'd made juice the night before and I had the juice. And all I'm doing is the juice and the protein drinks. And he said, my motor's moving again. And he said, and just the kind of apathy, depression, fog is lifting. He said, I've gone a couple of days. He said, you have to wean yourself off these neuroleptics and slowly. He said, but I'm feeling much better. And already they've reduced my dosage by half. And he said, so I'm keeping positive thoughts. I'm looking at positive solutions to every situation instead of accepting inevitable, negative, fatalistic consequences that I have no control over. He said, so I'm going to continue. Well, now he's off the juice part. Now he's on eating regular food. And he said, it's experience. I said, why? He said, well, I've never had anything other than the kind of typical meat, potato, and the potato's never, boiled potato's always french fry. He said, it's a whole different experience for me. He says, just a different experience going to a health food store and see Sprouts and stuff. He said, I never looked at any of this stuff before as being important or real or essential. He said, and it's kind of fun. He said, I'm getting used to tastes I've never had before. So that's one human being, just one single human being in a world of 285 million in America alone and over 6 billion worldwide. How many people each day wake up and don't realize how much power they have to make change in their life? Sorry we're having some background noise right now, but our studio's right near where there's some construction going on. Apologize for that. So what I want to do now is I'm going to open up our lines and see what are the changes you're making in your life. What are the issues you're trying to deal with? What are you coming to grips with that you'd like to share with us? This forum is for thoughts and positive suggestions that can help all people. The meaning and purpose of this one dialogue I've shared with you was that sometimes we think that the people who have the position of responsibility and authority and power and where to all would be making better choices than what they make. And if they're making wrong choices, how likely is it they're going to look at the choices others have made and be able to redirect them? Now, with this person being a teacher, professor, capacity to reach people, the changes he will go through over the next 6 months, year, 2 years, he's going to be more likely then to see a different perspective and be able to share that perspective. He'll share it with his psychologist friends and his psychiatrist friends, and maybe, just maybe, he'll be able to have some impact or influence upon them. And if he doesn't, well, at least he will have tried. And if he does, then maybe they in turn will turn around and be able to help other people as well. The reality is if we don't do anything, then nothing good is going to happen. There will be no change. At some point, someone must surrender something that they held as being certain and go into the area of let's try something else. If vegetarianism is where they go, if meditation, if exercise, if redirecting their energy, all of that put together can make a difference. I'm going to ask our engineer, Michael G. Michael, please give out the number so people can call us right now.
That number is 212-209-2900, and we already have several folks lined up.
Okay, let's go to the phones. And our call today will only be out of the tri-state New York area, not anywhere in the United States. Hi, you're on the air. What's your name, please?
Hi, Gary. My name is Fran.
Hi, Fran.
My question to you today is about water. I know I've listened to your program about the fluoride in the water, and I normally drink distilled water. But I had gone to a nutritionist about a month or so ago, and she said, why are you drinking distilled water? She said, you're not getting any minerals. I said, well, because I had heard that it was good. So she said, I think you should have regular spring water. So I bought spring water. And I noticed about a month or so later, I have a lot of back problems. I was achy. And I couldn't imagine why. And, of course, I go to a chiropractor on a regular basis. And finally, one day I said, hello, anybody home? I said, I've changed my water. I wonder if it could be that. Well, I went back to my distilled water just to see, and my back problems went away. Is there anything in that?
There's a lot in that. There are certain bottled waters that have an exceptionally high fluoride content. In fact, the fluoride in some natural spring waters could be 300% higher than tap water.
Oh.
And fluoride is a neurotoxin.
Yes.
It is also a musculoskeletal toxin.
Oh.
And can cause fluorosis. If you heard my skeletal fluorosis,
yes,
which is aches and pains similar to fibromyalgia, and it can manifest anywhere in the body, from your lower back, hence disguising what you might have thought, or a chiropractor or osteopath would have thought would have been a scoliosis or a chronic lower back pain or subluxation problem, or a pinched nerve even, actually could be local inflammation of the bone. Now, I heard from people yesterday that the Today Show had a dentist or someone on talking about, I didn't hear the show, I didn't see the Today Show, and so I was not aware, and I only got partial information, but they were heavily promoting fluoride and all of its benefits, and said that we should fluoridate all of our water supply, and we should pass laws mandating fluoridation and take supplements, etc. First of all, separate out the person from their message. They shouldn't attack the person, because everyone has a right to their opinion. We can disagree with that. So the real issue is their information correct? They did not support their contentions with hard data. When I did a three-part series, Fluoridation, A Deadly Legacy, I offered citation after citation, quote after quote, from my original report that is now all on the webpage, GaryNull.com. If you go to GaryNull.com, GaryNull.com, it starts with www.GaryNull.com, go under Issues. Under Issues, go under Fluoride. Now, I have an older article called The Fluoride Fiasco. This is a brand new one, Fluoride, A Deadly Legacy, and you will see the citations, hundreds of them. You'll see all the information. What you should do is then contact the producers of the Today Show and suggest that the host and the producers were not aware that a challenge to the other person is probably in order. And if they would like, I will come on. If not myself, I will certainly give the names of other people and to offer a difference, not to attack the person. There's nothing constructive in that, but rather to say, look, here is another point of view. And the whole idea of being in a society where we're supposed to be a democracy is to have various ideas from which to select. And I will provide that information. You can download my information and email it to them. You can transfer it over to them. So at least they have the entire document. And once they see how many scientists, Nobel Prize winners, how many published peer-reviewed journals condemn fluoride at every level, from genetics and cancer of the bone to macular degeneration and modeling of the teeth to fluorosis and arthritis and heart disease and immune dysfunction, maybe they might open themselves up to that. So you have to be careful. The fact that something is bottled as a mineral water does not mean that it's necessarily healthy.
Very good.
And you should contact the company, who will give their address on the bottle, and ask them, would you please send me your entire chemical analysis of your water. There you'll have a chance to see if there's any arsenic or fluoride or anything in the water.
And
arsenic. And remember, yes, arsenic can be in water. And you then can make a judgment whether or not you want to try a different bottled water. Now, quite simply, healthy hard water helps prevent osteoporosis. Healthy hard water with adequate calcium magnesium is good for our heart. But you have to make sure there's not a toxic hard water at the same time.
Right.
If it is, then by juicing, you get far, far, far more minerals. I'm talking about by 1,000% more minerals in your body from fruits and vegetables than you do from tap water.
Well, I do juice. So, in other words, I could continue to, after I find out about who has good water, have the distilled water, but get my minerals other ways.
That's correct. Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for being here.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Let's take another call. Hi. Your turn. What's your name, please?
Hello, sir. My name is George. I'm from Manhattan.
Hi, George.
Hi. I think this investigative report you're doing about the Pacific situation and BAI situation is incredible. I only heard 20 minutes of the first interview with Betsy Walsh, so I can't comment on that. The second program was extraordinary and left a couple of questions in my mind and was extraordinary on two levels, at least. And that was the one where you and Ken Ford had agreed that Bernard White would have a chance to go before the board and air his grievances.
That's correct.
And the other was where Tomas Moran, I think it was, it may have been the other gentleman, it may have been Rob Robinson, or one of the people you were interviewing, said that BAI was never being considered as a selling point, never will be, and is not.
That's correct.
Present. Okay. I mentioned those facts on Marjorie Moore's program one morning while she had a guest who was a listener to the station named Carol Taylor. And I mentioned these points, and Marjorie said she must have heard the program as well. She said, yes, that's correct, just as you did right now. And then Carol Taylor jumped in and said, there is a central demonic figure in this whole situation who is fomenting the situation. And I said, who is that? Marjorie said, don't try to pin her down on that. And I said, why not? She cannot make a claim like that. You know, it's irresponsible. It said and then all three of us began talking, and I just ended up yelling, you're muddying the waters, you're muddying the et cetera, et cetera. You know, it was just a very unpleasant experience. I hope that your third report, and I even hope, as a matter of fact, because it's great radio, that it goes on for another six, you know, that you can't quite, you know, for several weeks, actually, until you can sort this thing out. Let me ask you directly, do you think you can arrive at some kind of a solution?
Do I personally? No, I do not.
I didn't think so either, Gary. You're incredible. Why do you say that? Could you tell me?
Because I do not believe that I have the influence to convince people to stay focused on facts and rather than suppositions. So what I've done instead, I have not shared my personal feelings with them. Instead, I've asked them to share their personal feelings with each other.
Right.
The healing has to be between people who share both ideological, political differences on what constitutes proper broadcasting. And the first meeting is this weekend. We are having our first meeting. And my position is not there to take any side, but rather to keep the sides focused upon the issues and not attack each other. Nothing's constructive if people attack each other. So that's what we're up to. And we are going forward. I will continue to do shows. My next show will be on Monday. And we're going to be talking with people. And it may take longer than what we thought, but at least the process of healing is starting. And a fair and objective healing for Bernard White is certainly essential to that process. Thank you very much for your calls. We're out of time. Have a nice weekend, everyone. I'll see you back here Monday.